brought to you by Prescient Investment Management. Informed by science, guided by insight. Prescient Investment Management is an authorized FSP.
Welcome to another episode of Honest Money. We're talking about money today, actually in the purest sense, money. And I needed to bring in some serious backup for this because it's a topic a little bit out of my kind of my drive. So we're talking to Henk Kotze, who's got a fantastic title. He's head of, and I have to read it because I'm going to mess it up, head of cash and income at Prescient Investment Management. Henk, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, awesome, Warren. Thank you so much. And morning to everyone. I appreciate the time and to get to chat to you guys today about, as you said, money.
So one of the things that impacts money most is going to be interest rates, and one of the things that impacts interest rates is inflation. And in the not too distant past, we've had the head of the Fed, which is basically the Reserve Bank in America, telling us that he thinks their target of 2% inflation is still some way off. What does that mean? What are we talking about when we hear that? Is that good news or bad news?
Yeah, that's I think sort of the key question I think that's facing global markets and people that need to allocate money globally at this point in time. And this the magic 2% number for the Federal Reserve is sort of what they target through an interest rate cycle, and that's sort of the long-term average that they try and get to. Obviously, we know that inflation peaked last year in the US at 9.1, which is incredible to think about it. If you told me 15 years ago when I started in markets that we would see inflation at 9.1 in the US, I would have probably told you you're smoking your socks. But we got there, now it's coming down. But I think the key driver behind a lot of the uncertainty is this: it's not really coming down as fast as the people, or at least as the market has expected. And for us, if we, again, just being more systematic and thinking about data and trying to understand why that is more sticky, just maybe one or two key points around that. So one of the key drivers historically and still today of inflation in the US and globally is house prices and what they call shelter. And if you think about the last print of 4% and you break that down, there's very little inflation except for shelter. So 2.6 of the 4 was shelter. And if I then go and we dive into the shelter component specifically, and you look at house prices trying to give you a leading indicator of what that's going to do, so then you compare the two. So thinking about shelter as a component and house prices, house prices has really fallen off a cliff in the US, and we do expect that to now filter through into that shelter component. So that the remark around 2% not being sort of in our future and being some way off might not be that accurate. And we think if you think about the data and we get a little closer to the detail, it's very probable. And why is that important? As you said, that's going to drive what the interest rates do. And if you think about the Fed and where the market expects them to go, two key sort of things you need to think about: are they going to increase rates in the short term more? Yes, the market expects that. Will they do it? Maybe. But almost more importantly, what's the expectation for them? What are they going to do further out? And there, the market was saying that they're going to cut a little bit deeper, so reduce rates within the sort of next 2 year time frame to closer to 3%. We're currently around 5%. And why the market is sort of taking a bit of a wobble is that market is now saying it's not going to be 3% long term, it's now going to be closer to 4% because of this more sticky inflation numbers. So our sense, if you think about the numbers, probably we go down closer to 2 sooner. That will give the Federal Reserve opportunity to cut rates quicker and deeper, and that should be a good thing for all of us.
So we're a little bit used to interest rates, higher interest rates and inflation and those things. So when we hear, an interest number of 5%, it doesn't sound scary to us. It doesn't sound strange. But I mean, for context, over the last 10 years, what would you have been earning on interest in America?
Yeah, so that's, again, a very good question. They've really been running very, very low interest rates. So if you had to average your interest rate over the last 10 years, I would take a hazard a guess and say it would have been less than 2% that you would have earned. So we've come off a very, very low base interest rates globally, specifically in the US. But also what's interesting, if you think about the Federal Reserve and how they react in interest rate cycles, so hiking cycles are fairly gradual as they try and tame inflation and try and see how the impact of higher rates filters through into the economy. But when they see an opportunity to reduce rates, so if you think back to previous cycles of cutting rates, they don't really cut rates by only 1% as the market currently is pricing. They go in and they cut 3%, 4%, 5%. So for us, it's interesting to think about that dynamic. If they get the opportunity to start cutting, we do think it's probably going to be a lot deeper than the current pricing.
So I mean, reserve banks are not all-knowing, all-seeing beings. And I think we, you know, watching what the Federal Reserve did at the start of this whole inflation story, I remember they had this word, which I believe has now been banned in the dictionaries of the Federal Reserve, called transient, where they were saying, you know, this inflation's coming, but it's just going to be, you know, it's going to be here for a little bit, and then it's going to disappear, and it didn't disappear. It's still around. It's like that cousin that comes to visit, you know, around Christmas, and you still got them around Valentine's Day. So in a situation like this, where we don't need to rely on the Fed, or let's say we shouldn't rely on the Fed to read inflation completely accurately. They're operating off a set of data which eventually gets published to the world, but equally that sometimes the world, I feel, you know, anticipates these things a little bit better than the Fed has done in the last while. They're not as reliable as one would think.
Yeah, it's an interesting observation. I would hazard to say that judging the Fed by the decisions they made after we get new information really falls into the trap of what we call resulting, and that's really judging a decision by its outcome and not really thinking about the set of information you had when you made that decision, right? The Federal Reserve could not have known when they started increasing rates that Ukraine and Russia would go into a war that's still ongoing. These sort of things happen. And if you think about COVID and the shock that globally hit the system from a supply side and trying to get goods to different parts of the world, lockdowns, etc. I mean, the world economy doesn't just get out of that normally and then find its normal path and rhythm again. We should expect to see things be a little bit wobbly and a little bit out of the ordinary, trying to normalize, getting back to its long-term sort of trends and medians. So, yes, the Fed has maybe they were behind the curve initially and trying to catch up. Yes, it might have shocked the markets a little bit more than what they should. But I think we should also, you know, just have some recognition for the fact they had the data at their disposal. They are very, very astute and very smart in what they do. They often the numbers thrown around that they've got 100 PhDs that work for them. And the other thing is what the market is saying, don't fight the Fed. The Fed, I mean, they do set policy rates. That's really important globally. And I would hazard to say that, I mean, they've done what they can and they've done what they should. And they're doing pretty well to try and engineer the soft landing that they are talking about, trying to tame inflation, reel it in, and not really sink the economy, which is a very, very, very difficult thing to do.
Okay, so you're in a nice way telling me to be a bit more easy on them. They were actually not doing a bad job, and with all the stuff that was thrown at them.
Yeah, I think we can have a little bit of patience with them. It's not they've got a difficult job to try and make our lives go back to what it was pre-COVID. And I think that's a very, very difficult thing to do given everything that's transpired and happened. And certainly if you think about how globally markets have changed, the allocation of capital has changed, you know, with cryptos and the rest and the world talking about de-dollarization, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, all these things are thrown in the pot for them to try and think about. And I think it's not that straightforward of a job. And they've done a very, very good job of, I mean, inflation's come from 9.1, is now at 4%, and the economy hasn't really fallen over yet. So it's still a wait and see, but I think they've done okay.
So let's bring it a bit closer to home, because, you know, although America, America's interest rates always have an impact on the whole world. We in South Africa don't just follow them slavishly, but it's interesting when rates go up in America, rates tend to follow in South Africa. So it's worth watching America. But now let's talk about interest rates in South Africa and our Reserve Bank. And what are we sort of expecting here for the next while?
Yeah, I think that's important to look at it that way. And certainly we do follow the Fed quite closely. I mean, if you have to try and keep that interest rate differential between yourselves and the US is somewhat constant, if you want to try and stabilize sort of money across what happens in our economy. But if you think about SA and where interest rates are and where the market expects them to go, so currently, if you think about what we call the three-month JIBOR rate, so that's really the rate that us market participants look at when it comes to policy setting. It's a little bit higher than the repo rate for various reasons, but let's use that as an example. Currently around 8.5%, and the market expects that to go just a little bit north of 8.7. So another 25 basis points of increases in the near future. So if you think about where that was closer to 9.5 during May, just after the Lady Russia debacle. So it's come in quite nicely, but still a little bit of expectation for some pain in terms of higher rates in the, let's call it, the next 6 months. And then they do start seeing the market does expect it to start coming off a little bit. What we find interesting, if you think about the path of Federal Reserve interest rate or US interest rates and ours, they expect them to cut a little bit more than what we currently expect them to cut. So again, in our sense, if we think about what our market is pricing, the surprise here should be and could be that markets are expecting rates to be too high for too long, and the market and they could be lower a lot sooner than what we expect currently.
And that's so very good.
I mean,
news.
Let me try and justify that statement as well.
So, I'm sorry, Henk. Please carry on. It was that was going to be my question.
Let me justify why I'm saying that. So, if you think about what the sort of SA context, you're trying to sort of rein in inflation that's not really demand driven, right? So, inflation in South Africa is not because everyone wants to buy more goods and there's a strong flourishing economy. It's really because we're importing these prices from offshore, and the global shock to prices is really now filtering through into our own system. So hiking interest rates doesn't really rein that in. So the question is, what will they do and what should they do? It's not really the same question. So yes, they probably will hike more, but should they? Probably not. So yes, they're trying to protect the rand in some sense, trying to keep up with what the Fed's going to do. But the moment the Fed start taking the foot off the pedal there, cutting rates, we certainly will see rates coming lower in South Africa.
So, I mean, I think it's fantastic news from the point of view that if rates come down a bit quicker than everyone anticipates, then the people sitting with debt get some breathing room a bit quicker and a bit earlier than we're all expecting at the moment. And for investors in bonds, let's be clear about that, but if interest rates come down, it means the price of bonds goes up, so you get some capital appreciation in bonds, which is nice, and stock markets as well. Share markets will always enjoy a falling interest rate environment much more than it will enjoy a rising interest rate environment. So those sound like some fairly positive dynamics there. But maybe let's just kind of round it out. I mean, we're sitting in a world of enormous uncertainty and a lot going on. So I'm going to ask you the question I get asked the most at the moment is, what should investors be doing now in this kind of an environment?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I often tell our clients that yes, high interest rates is very, very tough for us, that sort of man on the street that we're paying off our mortgage, et cetera, but for us as investors who get to earn that interest rate, it's a fantastic environment, right? So if we think about some of the sort of money market cash and income type portfolios that you can buy in the South African context, you have yields that's close to 10% with a risk profile that's very, very limited. So you're getting really, really good compensation for deploying your capital in South Africa from an interest rate perspective. So if I think about an income portfolio that we run, our yields close to 11%. If you think about a pessimistic inflation outcome of, say, 6% over the next 2-3 years, that's inflation plus 5%. So that's what you should expect to get from equities in the long run, right? So you don't have to take all that much risk to start to really hit very, very good real returns in the South African context. So, and I think that's key. If I think about the way we've positioned our asset classes and our views across, we're pretty neutral to pessimistic because of all this uncertainty. Monetary policy is quite tight. We are seeing economies turning over. So you don't have to go and push the boat out to get good returns because of these high interest rates. So as a South African, yes, it's tough to see them this high, but it's also good for us to earn them.
So that's kind of a good message from someone who understands the market of the income side very well, because I think to bank inflation plus five is very difficult to do. It's just it's a nice thing to write on a marketing document, but to actually be able to get it and to get it with reasonably low risk is rare. And when you see it, your eyes should light up, and you can see the excitement kind of coming through with Henk there when he's talking about it, because it is rare. It's a nice time to kind of look at that and say, great, this is a time to kind of make hay while the sun shines. So Henk, we're actually through our time already, and I've got to ask you my favorite question for a new guest, and it's always a surprise, so we don't give you a chance to prepare for it. But if you had to meet your 18 or 21-year-old self now, with the benefit of the time and experience you've got now, what would be the one lesson you would like to teach yourself?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think the one key thing that people often tell you and that you don't really listen to is to start investing soon and early, and to not touch the things that you've put away. So when you've invested, to leave it. You cannot time the market. The only thing that you need is time in the market, right? So for us, that's one of the sort of key things that we try and achieve at Prescient as well. So if I had to talk to myself, I'm not going to give my age away, but when I was 18 a little while ago, 2 or 3 years ago, I would say that start investing and leave the money right there. Don't go buying a new car or spending on a new PlayStation. Invest and just keep it there. I think it's, was it Einstein who said that there's two people in the world, or two types of people, the one that understands compound interest and the other one that pays it.
Yeah, those that understand it will earn it, and those that don't understand it will pay it. And that's the point, is we need to stay out of debt and let that compound on us. Henk Kotze, thanks so much for your time and for your information. I'm always scared of getting a fixed income manager or a cash manager on the show, because it's easy to devolve to jargon. And you didn't. I was tracking, and I don't think you used a single bit of jargon in the entire show. So well done. That's a world first.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having us. And I often tell the story when talking to clients way back when I started in the markets, fixed income was sort of the people in the corner. No one talked to us. No one wanted to know what we were doing. You would go into a morning meeting and talk about how fantastic bonds are and what we're going to do and all the yield curves and all the things. And everyone would sort of nod their head. And then the next guy would walk in and all he would say is Anglos, and they would forget about us already. But that's changing now with the yields where they are. And we don't want to go back into the corner. So we're trying our best to dumb it down. But yeah, thanks for everyone for listening, and good luck out there. Warren, thanks again. And hopefully we chat soon again.
Brought to you by Prescient Investment Management. Informed by science, guided by insight. Prescient Investment Management is an authorized FSP.